Court of Texas is now in session pursuant to adjournment.
Thank you. Be seated. The orders of the court are posted outside and in the clerk's office and are available for your inspection. We are happy to welcome students from the Woods Middle School in Houston to view this oral argument. This is the final day that the court will meet in these chambers as they are currently decorated and constructed, unless there are further delays. We expect, when we have our next oral submission in 2 weeks, to be visitors in the Third Court of Appeals courtroom in the Price Daniel Senior Building. So we do mark this conclusion of 32 years of oral arguments in this room as decorated. There's only one cause set for submission this morning. It is the Railroad Commission of Texas and Dan Morales, Attorney General, versus Lone Star Gas Company, a division of InSearch Corporation and InSearch Gas Company from Travis County. Justices Doggett and Gamage are recused in this case and will not participate in the deliberation or decision. Court has allotted 25 minutes for each side to present oral argument. The petitioners may withhold such time from the initial argument as they desire to save for rebuttal. These arguments are being recorded for the court, and anyone who desires to listen to tapes of the arguments may make application with our clerk. The court is now ready to hear oral arguments from petitioners.
May it please the court, Ms. Dalla Miller will present arguments for petitioners.
May it please the court, my name is Sally Miller. I'm an assistant attorney general representing the Railroad Commission and Dan Morales in this case. In this case, the Court of Appeals made a federal preemption holding in which it failed to recognize the express exclusion for intrastate transportation and sales under both the Natural Gas Act and the Natural Gas Policy Act. The court found these rules promulgated by the Railroad Commission to be preempted, and in so doing has threatened the traditional role of the Railroad Commission in regulating the intrastate transportation and sales of natural gas within Texas. These rules were promulgated in response to the creation of marketing affiliates by pipelines, which marketing affiliates were able to buy gas and transport gas in circumvention of various Railroad Commission rules, which were previously applicable only to pipelines. In the early to mid-80s, pipelines began transporting gas that was owned by third parties, in addition to buying gas from a producer and reselling it to a user. In this way, the merchant role of the pipelines, the buying and reselling, was separated from their transportation role. Marketing affiliates were established by the pipelines, which sell gas primarily on the spot market, and they took up some of the role that the pipelines had previously had in buying gas and reselling it. A Lone Star vice president testified in the district court that InSearch Gas Company, which is Lone Star's marketing affiliate, generally only bought gas close enough to be able to transport it on Lone Star's pipeline system. In this way, the combined corporations still made a profit off of both reselling the gas and transporting the gas. It's abuses of this practice of splitting up the reselling function and the transportation function of pipelines that led to the adoption of the rules. There are at least two kinds of abuses of the relationship which were addressed by these rules. The first was curtailment of higher priority casing head gas purchases by the pipelines while their affiliates were buying lower priority gas well gas and transporting it on the same pipeline system. In this way, they effectively circumvented the Commission's rules on priority of gas purchases. When you shut in a casing head gas well, you shut in an oil well because casing head gas is gas produced in association with oil. This practice is, by definition, waste of natural resources if the pipeline alone had been involved. The second abuse that was addressed by the rules was an anti-competitive, discriminatory practice by the pipelines and their marketing affiliates in negotiating arrangements to sell gas to the marketing affiliate, which would then be transported on its affiliate's pipeline. And this sales arrangement to the affiliate was tied to a release of claims with which the purchaser had against the pipeline under a long-term contract for the sale of gas. The rules apply only if the pipeline and the marketing affiliate use the same pipeline to transport gas. In this case, we felt that the Court of Appeals did not understand the Natural Gas Policy Act and did not do a proper preemption analysis in order to determine whether or not the rules are preemptive. There is no express or implied intent by Congress to preempt the rules adopted by the Railroad Commission. And further, the rules do not conflict with any federal energy policy and are, in fact, are essential to the federal energy policy of preventing anti-competitive abuses by pipelines and their marketing affiliates. These rules perfectly complement FERC's Order 497, which is applicable only to interstate pipelines and their marketing affiliates, and which provides that a pipeline may not condition a tie or release of gas to any agreement between the producer and a marketing affiliate of that pipeline. I'll first address the issue of express or implied preemption under the Natural Gas Act and the Natural Gas Policy Act. There are three exceptions to federal regulation or jurisdiction under the Natural Gas Act. These three exceptions to regulation are intrastate transportation and sales, local distribution, and production and gathering. In this way, Congress set up an interlocking system of regulation in which the federal government, FERC, has jurisdiction over interstate transportation and sales of gas, and state governments, the Railroad Commission here, has jurisdiction over intrastate transportation and sales, local distribution, production and gathering.
Your rules, which are under challenge here, apply to interstate pipelines as well as intrastate pipelines, do they not?
The rules do apply. The Commission has said it would not issue an enforcement order unless it was satisfied that there was no preemption and would make a finding to that effect. Furthermore, the rules as challenged are only challenged by an intrastate pipeline, Lone Star, and an intrastate marketing affiliate. So we feel that the application of the rules to an interstate pipeline is simply not before this court.
Well, at one point, Lone Star was an interstate pipeline, was it not?
At one time, yes, sir, but they brought the rule, they brought this challenge as to their intrastate activities only.
Why does it make any sense for the Railroad Commission to have one rule regarding this conduct that would apply to intrastate pipelines but would not apply to interstate pipelines doing the same thing?
I suppose the short answer to that question is that, as I've said, under the Natural Gas Act, the primary jurisdiction over interstate pipelines is under the is with FERC and not with the Railroad Commission.
Well, but it does, if two pipelines, one's interstate, one's intrastate, they're both doing the same thing, and the Railroad Commission promulgates rules that affect the intrastate pipeline, but it can't promulgate rules that affect the interstate pipeline, how does that, why doesn't that impact on national gas policy?
The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission has a rule which is, in at least one part, virtually identical to parts of the Railroad Commission rule which is challenged here today, with regard to the tying arrangement between sales to the marketing affiliate and releases from the pipeline of claims under its long-term contract with the producer.
Does it have the same effect, though, with Rule 30?
With regard to the priority systems?
Yes.
Priority systems are something which have traditionally been more in the jurisdiction of states because they generally relate to waste and the prevention of waste and would come under the production and gathering exception.
So the FERC order does not?
So the FERC order does not address waste, nor could it.
But it does not have, the FERC order, I take it, does not have the conjunction of Rule 30 and 34 that's complained about in this case.
No, sir, it does not.
is there any serious contention that the FERC order, whatever other purposes it might have, does affect the price of gas to the ultimate consumer?
That the FERC order does, or the...
I'm sorry, that the Railroad Commission order.
I don't believe so, no, sir. That the rules price neutral on its face. It has.
But does it, in fact, affect the Railroad Commission? Is it the Railroad Commission's position that it does not, in fact, affect price?
That is our position. And the Court of Appeals so found, I believe.
Well, you say their findings are conflicting, actually. But
yes, sir. The Natural Gas Policy Act was adopted by Congress in 1978 to relieve shortages in the interstate gas market. There's no sweeping delegation of jurisdiction to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission over intrastate transportation and sales of gas. The definition of intrastate pipeline in that statute is a pipeline not subject to the jurisdiction of FERC under the Natural Gas Act. So the jurisdictional premise of the Natural Gas Policy Act is based on these three exclusions from regulation in the Natural Gas Act. It did not change the relationship then between federal and state regulation in the natural gas industry. The Natural Gas Policy Act did accomplish two things with regard to intrastate gas, however. The first one was the Sections 311 and 312 mechanisms, which allow gas to move between the intrastate market and the interstate market without subjecting the intrastate pipeline to FERC jurisdiction. We believe that this is one place where the Court of Appeals simply misunderstood the Natural Gas Policy Act and the importance of Section 601 of that Act, which expressly provides that sales under Section 311 and 312 do not subject an intrastate pipeline to FERC jurisdiction. The legislative histories of these sections of the statute are attached to our brief and clearly demonstrate congressional intent not to subject an intrastate pipeline to FERC jurisdiction. The second thing which the Natural Gas Policy Act did with regard to intrastate gas was the adoption of maximum lawful wellhead price controls, which apply to intrastate sales of gas as well as interstate sales. However, under Section 602 of the statute, states are permitted to adopt a lower maximum lawful price for intrastate gas. The significance of this is that first, Congress recognized that regulation at the state level and the federal level do not have to be identical in order to be both in furtherance of national energy policy. And second, the statute only prevented the Railroad Commission or the legislature from establishing a higher maximum lawful price than those established by FERC. We could still establish a lower price and be in furtherance of national energy policy. Even if the Commission's rules do affect the price of gas, which we don't believe they do.
Let me ask you about that again. How, if NSERC is prohibited from NSERC gas from buying and selling spot market gas in essence, or its ability to do so is greatly diminished, how doesn't that increase the price of gas to the ultimate consumer?
Judge, we don't believe that the rules prohibit NSERC from buying as much gas as it wants to in the market. The rules only apply to NSERC if it transports gas on Lone Star's pipeline, and then even if it does transport gas on Lone Star's pipeline, there are three ways that NSERC can choose to comply with the rules. The first is to comply with the priority systems as set out for the
Which
purchase of gas.
The price?
There's conflicting evidence whether or not it raises the price. There's evidence, but there's testimony by a former Commissioner Mr. Jobe, that in his experience, casing head gas is not the most expensive gas.
Well, it's more expensive than spot market gas, isn't it?
There's testimony to the contrary in the record, sir.
So your view of this is that even though spot market gas is cheaper than the long-term dedicated gas, and even though the effect of this rule is to restrict the purchase and transportation of spot market gas, that doesn't affect the price of the ultimate consumer.
We don't believe that it restricts the transportation.
At all.
No, sir. What we believe is what the rules were designed to do was to prevent the tying arrangement between releasing gas from Lone Star's long-term contract in order to make a sale to InSearch and forcing the producer to renegotiate their long-term contract with Lone Star. That's what the rules were designed to do.
Doesn't that reduce the cost?
We believe that Lone Star has, and there's evidence in the record, that Lone Star has plenty of other ways to renegotiate its long-term contracts with producers besides tying the transportation arrangements to a release and a renegotiation.
Lone Star and InSearch are surely not going through this routine in order to increase the price of gas, are they?
I would doubt it, yes, sir.
Yeah. So wouldn't it seem like they're trying to reduce it? And the rules are trying to stop that.
The rules are aimed at a practice that the commission has found to be discriminatory and anti-competitive, and which FERC has found to be discriminatory and anti-competitive. Okay. And that, you know, while the Commissioner Jobe testified that while the commission does have an obligation to supply cheap gas to consumers, they also have an obligation to assure a long-term supply of gas. And there's testimony in the record that the rules would moderate future price increases by assuring a long-term supply of gas and encouraging development of deep pockets of gas and many other things. We believe that it's possible for Lone Star and InSearch to comply with the Texas regulation and with any federal regulations which they are subject to. We don't believe that they are subject to any. They haven't pinpointed what federal statutes or regulations they believe they're subject to.
Well, to the extent Lone Star does have interstate pipeline, they are subject to federal regulation on that.
I believe they've maintained that interstate system separate from their intrastate system, and I also believe that they may have divested that interstate system since this case was started.
So your answer is no, they're not Lone Star.
That is my answer, yes, sir, because I believe that they are not.
So the Court of Appeals is an error in that regard, at least?
Yes, sir. We also believe that the Court of Appeals was in error in relying on some perceived federal interest in low gas prices as the only federal interest in regulating gas. There is also a federal interest in, well, first of all, the federal interest is in a reasonably priced gas to assure adequate supply. The reason for the Natural Gas Policy Act was that there were unreasonably low regulated prices in the interstate market, which caused a shortage of gas in the 70s, which led to the adoption of the Natural Gas Policy Act. And that act actually raised prices in the interstate market. There are other federal energy goals which include correction of monopolistic practices and abuses relating to the transportation of gas. And that would include FERC Order 497, which has a provision which is virtually identical to the Commission's Rule 34H3.
If this is an illegal tying practice, why didn't somebody just prosecute for federal antitrust?
I can't answer that.
They could, just as high as I don't think this has been addressed in the brief, but even the state itself could bring an action.
I haven't researched it, but I suppose we probably could. The Railroad Commission also has been given the duty under the Common Purchaser Act to address anti-competitive abuses by pipelines. And they believe that they've exercised this authority and, in fact, complied with their duty delegated to them by the legislature in adopting these rules. FERC Order 497 on its face is expressly not applicable to intrastate pipelines and their marketing affiliates because intrastate pipelines are simply not within the jurisdictional purview of FERC. The Railroad Commission regulations which have been challenged in this case are an essential part of implementing federal policy regarding anti-competitive abuses. of pipelines and their marketing affiliates, because unless both interstate and intrastate activities are regulated, it will thwart the purposes of federal regulation, which is essential under the Natural Gas Policy Act and the Natural Gas Act. I would refer the court to the cases of Exxon against Egerton and the Energy Reserves Group against Kansas Power and Light Company. In both of those cases, decided by the United States Supreme Court in 1983, they upheld statutes, one adopted by Alabama, the other by Kansas, which implemented policies with regard to intrastate gas. The Alabama statute also was a severance tax on all gas, so it was interstate as well as intrastate. And they upheld these statutes with regard to intrastate gas. These set up a system of regulation within those two states which would be different from the federal regulation, but nonetheless they were in furtherance of national energy policy and therefore were valid. In the Egerton case out of Alabama, the Alabama statute increased the severance tax on oil and gas in Alabama and prohibited producers from passing on the increase to their purchasers. The court found that this was preempted as to interstate gas, but was permissible as to intrastate gas. The second point I'd like to leave the court with is that a state statute which has any incidental effect on the price paid for gas at the wellhead or on the profit margins of purchasers or sellers is still valid. Again, the Exxon against Egerton case would stand for that principle, as well as the 1989 case of Northwest Central Pipeline against the Corporation Commission of Kansas, in which the Kansas Corporation Commission had adopted a regulation on proration.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear oral argument from respondents.
Your Honors, I'm here this morning with my partner, James Mann, on behalf of Lone Star Company, which is an intrastate pipeline and a regulated gas utility, and Inserts Gas Company, which is neither a pipeline nor a utility. I would like to start this morning by clearing some of the smoke and discussing what this case is and is not about. This case is not about whether Lone Star is going to be regulated by the Railroad Commission. It is regulated by the Railroad Commission as a common purchaser of gas and as a gas utility. It is not about whether Inserts Gas Company is going to be regulated by the Railroad Commission. Under the Court of Appeals judgment, InSearch is regulated by the Railroad Commission as a common purchaser of gas. It is not about whether the Railroad Commission retains its historical authority to protect correlative rights and prevent waste. The Commission clearly does, and it has that authority through the regulation of production. It is not about whether there is a pipeline monopoly on transportation, or whether the Railroad Commission can regulate transportation by an intrastate pipeline. The Railroad Commission can and does regulate transportation by intrastate pipelines under the Gas Utility Regulatory Act and the Cox Act through its Gas Utilities Division. And just as clearly, does not even purport to be regulating transportation through the rules at issue in this case. The case is not really even about whether the state's historical power to regulate intrastate pipelines has been preempted. That authority has not been preempted. And the historical power of the states to regulate intrastate transportation and intrastate sales for resales remains intact under the Court of Appeals decision and under our position in this lawsuit. What the case is about is whether the Railroad Commission has been authorized by the legislature of Texas to disregard separate corporate entities, amend the statutory definition of common purchaser by aggregating what the statute calls separate common purchasers who have separate demands and sell gas in separate markets, whether the commission has the authority to dictate the contents of offers to buy gas and to whom such offers must be made, whether the commission has the authority to ban contract negotiations as discriminatory without notice, hearing, evidence, or a finding that anybody is doing anything wrong. Since the legislature has clearly given the Railroad Commission no such authority, we do not believe that you reach the subsidiary issue of federal preemption. If, however, the Court of Appeals was correct in finding that the Commission had this authority under state law, then the Court of Appeals was also correct in its preemption analysis. There are clearly two different markets for natural gas, and that's not disputed in my understanding. There's the long-term utility market with long-term contracts, high prices, and reserves that are available for utility customers over the long haul. There's also the spot market where the prices are much lower. There's contracts last a day, a week, or a month instead of 10 or 20 years, and the reserves are unimportant. Lone Star sells on the utility market. Ensurge Gas Company is a spot market company. There are spot market companies out there that are affiliated with interstate pipelines, that are affiliated with intrastate pipelines, and there are many, many buyers of gas, spot market companies, brokers, that are affiliated with neither. The rules at issue here impact only upon those spot market companies that are affiliated with intrastate pipelines. Prior to these rules, if a producer of gas wanted to sell his gas on the spot market and he had a long-term contract with a utility such as Lone Star, he would go to that utility and ask to get a release of his dedication of his gas reserves to the long-term contract. Lone Star, or the whatever pipeline, then would negotiate for that release. It would get relief from its take-or-pay liabilities under the contract, which it was incurring because it just simply had not the market to take all the gas, and it would negotiate price reductions under its long-term contract. Both of these directly inure to the benefit of the utility customers. Price reductions are flowed through dollar for dollar under the utility's regulated rates. Everybody benefit by this free market in operation. The pipeline benefited. It got out of some of its take-or-pay liabilities that were accruing, and it got lower prices for gas. Consumers benefited from the lower prices flowed through dollar by dollar. Producers benefited because they were able to sell the gas, more gas that would otherwise sit there in the ground, and get the cash flow that they needed to maintain their operations.
But selling it at a lower price.
They were selling it at a lower price, and they did not like that. And the producers, with their political clout, pushed through the Railroad Commission these rules, which are pure and simple producer protectionism. Under Rule 30, Ensurge and Lone Star are one first purchaser, and they are subject to the rateability rules as one first purchaser, despite the fact that they are separate companies, they have separate contracts, and they sell gas in entirely different markets with different market demands. What that means is that there is a lowest common denominator effect. Under the rateability rules, if Lone Star can only take, as the evidence shows in this case, approximately 25% of the gas available to it under contract, then under Rule 30, Ensurge can only take 25% of the gas available to it, despite the fact that it has a demand out there for every MCF of gas it can get. We're shutting in gas for which the market is there. Conversely, if the market changes again, back to the way it was in the 70s, and Ensurge loses its market, and Ensurge can't take the gas available to it under contract, Lone Star can't take the gas it needs to meet its utility demand. It gets cold in North Texas sometimes, and if for any reason Ensurge can't take the gas available to it, Lone Star similarly is stuck, and it gets colder and colder in the houses served by Lone Star. (Clears throat) under Rule 34, you can qualify a company like InSearch as a special marketing program, which in some instances permits it to be treated as a separate first purchaser of gas, the way it should be in the first place. As an interesting aside, Rule 30 permits the Commission to set aside a special market designation under Rule 34 upon a finding that the purpose of that designation was to circumvent the general rule aggregating the two as a first single first purchaser. Now, that is the only reason anybody would ever designate a company as a special marketing program. So in essence, what the rules say is that you may have a special marketing program if the Railroad Commission wants you to have a special marketing program. If you do qualify as a special marketing program, and if the Commission permits you to do so, then you, the special marketing program, and the affiliated pipeline are subject to a long list of requirements. Any offer to buy by the special marketing program must be made to all producers on the affiliated pipeline system who have been selling to the pipeline. Not every producer in the field, which was the way it should be if it had anything to do with rateability or waste, but every producer on the pipeline system. In Lone Star's case, that's some 40,000. Oh, InSearch wants to buy 100 MCF of gas. It's got to make the offer to 40,000 different wells. There is an absolute prohibition in the rules for an offer to buy by the special marketing program or to release by the pipeline to include any price concessions, any take-or-pay relief other than a volume-for-volume credit.
Why isn't it an illegal tying arrangement for InSearch to condition purchase of its gas on some contractual benefit to Lone Star?
It might be. The way that it operates, first of all, the evidence in this case is clear that Lone Star has never once conditioned a release of the gas on a sale to InSearch. If you want a release of the gas to sell to anybody, the negotiations are the same. And to get the release of the contractual dedication, the pipeline negotiates for price concessions. And that is the way that the evidence in this case shows that it works out there in the real world.
Are there other transporters, are there other purchasers who are using Lone Star to transport gas for sale to spot market buyers?
Certainly, and the evidence so reflects in this case.
Besides InSearch gas?
Oh, yes. There are end users who buy directly on the spot market and transport on Lone Star. The evidence in this case shows, for instance, that Houston Power and Light used to buy a lot of gas from Lone Star. Now it buys directly from producers on the spot market and transports the gas on the system.
And the evidence is that when a purchaser such as that goes to a producer to arrange that sale and the gas is dedicated to Lone Star, that in order to release the gas to sell it to that purchaser, Lone Star would require some sort of concession on its contractual obligation.
It would negotiate for it. Yes. The Railroad Commission can show you no statutory authority to combine common purchasers into a single first purchaser as they have done by Rule 30. Common purchaser is something defined by the Common Purchasers Act. It is set out by statute, and the statute defines each and every entity that buys gas as a separate first purchaser. It does not authorize the Commission to combine separate first purchasers into one, even if they're affiliates. The statute talks about affiliates, and it, in some instances, makes an affiliate of a common carrier pipeline a common purchaser itself, but it's a separate common purchaser under the statutory definition. The Commission has simply amended the statute, which is something that this Court has expressly held it cannot do in this very context of what is and is not a common purchaser in the Coltex case cited in the briefs. The statutory duty of a common purchaser set out in the statute is to buy gas offered to it without discrimination between producers in a field and without undue discrimination between fields. The commission is given authority by the statute to hold a hearing, to take evidence, and determine whether there is discrimination occurring, and then to take specified actions if it finds that there is discrimination.
Here, the court granted writ on the preemption issues. Are you going to address those at some point?
Yes, sir, I intend to. Here, there have been no hearing, no findings, no evidence of discrimination, and none of the orders authorized by the statute have been entered. Instead, we have just by rule created a whole new category of first purchaser and required that new category, both pieces of it, to take ratably with each other statewide. Similarly, they can give you no authority for the requirements in Rule 34. The statute says that a common purchaser takes without discrimination the gas offered to it. The Railroad Commission has reversed that in this rule and says you have to offer. You offer to take the gas from everybody on the system, not that you have to take the gas that's offered to you. Further, the rule makes a blanket finding of discrimination. It prohibits an offer to contain specified terms. The Commission has no authority to dictate contract terms in the first place, much less the authority to dictate what can be contained in a consensual offer. I want the court to understand that they're not saying what can or cannot be in the contract here. They are saying it is prohibited for an offer to release gas to contain these specified terms. That is, any price concession, any take-or-pay relief other than a volume-for-volume credit. An offer, which may be freely refused, cannot be discrimination. Logic simply revolts at the proposition. The Commission says it has authority to prevent waste. Clearly it does. Section 86.082 of the Natural Resource Code tells the Commission to exercise its authority to prevent waste if the presence or imminence of waste is supported by a finding based on evidence introduced at a hearing after proper notice. We've had no hearing, we've had no evidence, we've had no finding. The Commission says it has power to prevent discrimination. Clearly it does. Section 111.091 of the Resources Code tells it to make inquiry into each field, and if discrimination is found, it may issue an order to a common purchaser to extend its lines, to connect to wells, and to make ratable purchases. Again, we've had no hearing, we've had no findings, and none of those orders have been entered. The Commission says it can protect correlative rights. It can. Section 86.083 of the Resources Code directs the Commission to exercise that authority in a common reservoir, not statewide, when evidence introduced at a hearing after proper notice will support a finding made by the Commission that the deliverability of that field is greater than the market demand. Again, we haven't done that. We have artificially restricted the market demand by limiting one purchaser to the market demand of the other purchaser combined into a single first purchaser. That restriction runs afoul of the statute I just quoted to you. It also runs afoul of this court's decision in the Woods case cited in the briefs, where this court was faced with a Railroad Commission order that restricted the allowables in a field to below the market demand for the gas from that field. This court says, in the Woods case, in adopting the order now in question, the Commission has set an arbitrary limit on reasonable market demand for gas from the reservoir and hence upon the reservoir allowable. The limit is based on factors which have nothing to do with market demand, and we agree with the trial court that the order is beyond the power delegated to the Commission by the legislature. That holding by this court is directly in point on this case. These rules restrict market demand, restrict the production statewide based on things that have nothing to do with market demand. The market demand is there. We just can't buy the gas because of these rules.
Counsel, on page 798 of the CA opinion statements made, the Supreme Court has consistently held that under the NGPA, federal law preempts the state attempts to regulate natural. What is your response to that?
Your Honor, if you are going to ignore, as the Court of Appeals did, this Court's decisions in the Woods case and the Coltex case, and say, as the Court of Appeals erroneously did, that the Railroad Commission has authority to do whatever it pleases without regard to what the state statute says, then you must look at this preemption question. What I have to say about the statement you just read is that it is overbroad. The Natural Gas Policy Act of 1978, for the first time, imposed federal control over intrastate gas. It did that repeatedly, and it did that expressly. All gas in the country was placed into one or more categories, and each category got a maximum lawful price set out by statute or subject to adjustment by the FERC. One of those categories was expressly intrastate gas. The same statute that imposed federal controls on the lawful price of all gas, including intrastate gas, also said that on X date, those price controls would go away. It's 1985 in most instances. That the price controls set out by the statute would go away and that price would no longer be subject to regulation by the FERC. The Supreme Court has said in the Transco case and several other cases since then that the reason for that price deregulation was a congressional decision that after this limited period of time from 1978 to 1985 that market forces would be permitted free rein to set a market price for natural gas in the United States. And that, according to the Supreme Court decisions, state regulations directed at purchasers and impacting the free market operation are preempted by that congressional decision that the market would be given free rein. That is my understanding of the Supreme Court cases, and I think that is pretty clearly what the United States Supreme Court has been saying. It's not any purchaser regulation. And according to the cases, many of the same policies may be achieved by the state by regulating production. These, for instance, the rateable take rules we're talking about here, these rules don't work. They never have worked before or after the existence of special marketing programs. Anytime there are two unaffiliated buyers in a single gas field, those two buyers are taken according to their own market demand and their own contracts. And if those two buyers are taken differently, then correlative rights are being impacted, then rateable takes are being impacted, because one may be taking a whole lot more gas than the other. And the rules don't address it. The way that that is supposed to be done, and the way that other states do it lawfully, is to regulate production of gas. Not purchasing, but production. They tell the producers in that field, you have to produce ratably. And that way, even if the purchasers are unaffiliated, the wells are producing ratable amounts of gas. What the commission has done here is delegated its responsibility to regulate production to the pipelines by, instead of regulating production, trying to regulate purchasing. And it is those purchasing regulations that the U.S. Supreme Court repeatedly strikes down if they impact upon the market, as these rules clearly do.
So you distance yourself somewhat from the Court of Appeals preemption?
The Court of Appeals decision is not something of which I am particularly proud, no sir. I think they're dead wrong on the statutory authority issue. I don't think they ever should have reached preemption.
But on the subject of preemption, you think they're on shaky ground there, too?
Not on these rules. Some of the statements they make in their decision, I believe, are overbroad in the opinion. These rules, however, are clearly preempted, assuming that there's state authority to promulgate them in the first place, which is an extremely shaky assumption. These rules were and are pure political plumes for producers. They're market manipulation. They're producer protectionism. They find no basis in any authority granted the Railroad Commission by the state of Texas. They're contrary.
They only protect producers against affiliates of pipelines.
Which is another point in our cross points, Your Honor.
That's not much protection.
That's right. It hurts us. It doesn't help them.
Unaffiliated purchasers are not affected by these rules.
That is correct. And they're out there. All that's impacted upon is the affiliated purchaser. And that is the point of our equal protection reply point. The rules are contrary to, directly contrary to, or at least inconsistent with the statutes that do authorize commission action. And they violate the decisions of this court and of the United States Supreme Court. The judgment of the Court of Appeals was correct if its reasoning was somewhat shaky. That judgment should be affirmed, and we respectfully so pray.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Like to make is that I understand that the producers felt like they'd been sold out by the Railroad Commission in the adoption of these rules because the producers wanted the Railroad Commission to completely outlaw marketing affiliates of pipelines, and the Railroad Commission refused to do that, and the producers felt like that the Railroad Commission had stopped a long way short of doing what needed to be done in adopting these rules. As to the state law issue, while the court may not believe that the rules are the wisest or the best that the Railroad Commission could have formulated or adopted, this court's not supposed to substitute its judgment for that of the commission, and as long as there's any justification in the record for the rules, which we believe there is, they must be upheld.
Is it true that the rules do not impact unaffiliated purchasers?
That is true.
Why?
The rules are
Why?
Tied to transportation.
Why?
And they don't impact affiliated purchasers if there's no transportation on the affiliated pipeline.
Well,
so that would treat an unaffiliated unaffiliated purchaser in the same boat as
have it transported on somebody's pipeline other than Lone Star.
That's right. In fact, I wished you had asked Mr. Duggins if there was any evidence that InSearch bought gas and transported it on any pipeline other than Lone Star's.
Well, why is the regulation aimed at only transportation by one company or an affiliated pipeline?
The source of the Commission's authority under the Common Purchaser Act is based on the exercise of the right to transport gas through a pipeline. So it's based on the Commission's statutory authority under the Common Purchaser Act, which directs the Commission to prevent monopolies and discrimination in the transportation of natural gas.
What about the argument that was made very forcibly that there's been discrimination, and by the rules themselves talk about discrimination, there's been no hearing, no evidence of finding of discrimination. How do you respond to that argument?
In the first place, I think that the legislature has given the commission the authority to do this by rulemaking, to proceed by rulemaking as well as to proceed in a contested case basis. The legislature has also specifically declared pipeline transportation to be a virtual monopoly. They've declared gas utilities to be, by definition, monopolies in the Gas Utilities Act. Lone Star and InSearch have both stipulated that they are common purchasers. The Commission has not rewritten the definition of common purchaser. What the Commission has done is to define discrimination to include the practice which was prohibited in Rule 34H3. They have not redefined common purchaser.
What evidence is there that to allow an affiliate of a pipeline to buy gas and transport it without these rules is anti-competitive versus allowing an unaffiliated company to do something?
If that was the only activity that was occurring, it would not be anti-competitive. What the commission prohibited was the tying arrangement.
But the Lone Star negotiates contractual modifications whenever it can, regardless of who the purchaser is, whether it's InSearch or an unaffiliated purchaser.
Yes, sir. And as I said back, the question is, what does InSearch do? And InSearch, there was testimony by a vice president of both companies, one man vice president of both companies, that InSearch only bought gas, or generally bought gas, only close enough so that it could transport it on Lone Star's pipeline. So it's that part of the transaction that's
but
the problem.
But InSearch does not condition the sale on contractual benefits to Lone Star, then there's no tie.
It's the release by Lone Star, because otherwise InSearch cannot buy the gas because it's dedicated by the producer to Lone Star's long-term contract. So if the producer cannot get a release from Lone Star, InSearch cannot buy. So there
and
has to
can
be.
Anybody else.
And neither can anybody else.
So how's that tie? Lone Star wants to get out of its contractual obligations to the extent it can, no matter who's buying the gas.
That's true.
Any other questions? Thank you. That concludes the argument in this call and concludes this open business of the court for today. The marshal will now please adjourn the court.